This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Beginnings on this holiday weekend. So excited that you spend a portion of your holiday with us, because we do have some great information for you, and I hope that you can put it to use and change certain aspects of your lives. And with us now is our co-host on the program, Mr. Joe McKenzie. He has this knack of turning candidates into contenders. If you'd like his website, it is RippleConnects.com, 763-438-1621. Joe McKenzie, a really trusted partner. Good morning and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. Happy Labor Day weekend.
And the same to you. I mean, we're talking about Labor Day weekend. We're talking about career and strategy and so forth. You know, we've talked several times about using our bench of advocates. We've talked about strategies in a pandemic. But what happens when you reach that crossroads in your career? What do you do when it's time to make some decisions? Maybe you're forced into making a decision. What do you do when you find yourself near the crossroads? Let's start there.
Absolutely, Freddie Bell. And I just want to predicate it by saying I reached a crossroads in my career about 15 years ago. And a lot of that I share with my clients and people that I speak to over the radio, that you kind of know that you're leading towards, you are basically reached a point where you want to wonder what the rest of your career looks like. Mm. And I reached that point. I was in office equipment sales for 15 years. I had a quota each month. I made 30, 40 calls a day. I was demonstrating equipment. You know, it was hectic. It was, but I got to the point where do I really want to do this the rest of my career? Mm-hmm. And I said, and I had this, that first step was to reflect on what does the rest of my career look like? So I think that is one of the key takeaways here. You will know that you're probably questioning if you want to do this the rest of your career. And in my early 30s, mid-30s, I did. And so I started to reflect. I started to understand where I'd really want to be, where I had the most meaningful career path. And that was working towards that nonprofit or something different than outside sales. I found myself reflecting more about where I think I was supposed to be or where I should be aiming towards. And that was that first step, Freddie, that allowed me. So I can't be alone in that. I think a lot of people have met that point in their career where they want to know what the rest of their career looks like. Do you agree with the reflection piece as a good first step?
I do. And let's talk about that reflection piece. How long do you reflect? What does that look like when you're talking about reflecting on your career?
Everybody's situation is going to be different. I think I started reflecting before I ultimately made that move from that office equipment industry, probably 2 years that I was searching for answers. I was asking a lot of questions, pulling in people that I thought could be a resource at that point if I wanted to reinvent myself. And now I'm at that crossroads. I think I made the decision that I wanted to work towards a nonprofit. Over time, it took a couple of years of that reflection, gaining some new knowledge, then reflect again. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just one day. It was over a course of 2 years that helped me. Obviously, everybody's going to be in a different situation in their career, but it seemed to help me to get that clarity piece, because I didn't know what I didn't know. And through that reflection, asking, reflect, meet, explore, it really helped me to move past the reflection point and move to some more actionable steps.
Are there certain aspects of the reflections or certain questions that you ask yourself when you're in that time of retrospect and you're taking a look at your career as a whole?
I think so. You ask, you know, where can I be the most impact? Can I take these skills that I've had over here for so many years? Do you think those skills are needed over here? And early on, Freddie, I didn't think there was. I didn't think it would be the case. I think that was that self-limiting mindset that I had, that selling or managing or communicating or what have you, being out in the community. Where does that play a part in the nonprofit sector? I just hadn't connected the dots at that point. Mm-hmm. And I had that self-limiting type of mindset. But over that reflection period and that clarity, that renewed clarity, Freddie, I started to realize the nonprofit sector needed those skills. That's where I think I gained the most traction was where can I be the most impacted, give the most impact to an industry? And that's where I saw that.
Wow. Everybody, we're talking with Joe McKenzie this weekend. We're talking about steps that you can take when you reach a crossroads in your career. And so the time for reflection is one. What's the next, another idea that we might consider when we find ourselves at the crossroads?
Well, one of them could be just volunteering on the side, working your career, staying in that career. But that volunteering piece, we've talked about this for several years now, Freddie. But, you know, that volunteering piece allowed me to do by serving on some nonprofit boards and being involved in that. I learned how my skills could adapt firsthand in real world. It's like I could see myself doing this because I'm volunteering. I see what how an executive director is handling this problem, solving this issue. Volunteering gave me probably twice as much clarity as I had if I wouldn't have been involved in a volunteering role. So I think that's a natural progression to volunteer, to kind of test the waters at a kind of a no-cost way to see yourself and doing something new, especially if you're at the crossroads. So I think, Freddie, that would be my next step is get involved. Get involved with what you think you're wanting to do and let that play out.
That's interesting. There are some people who are listening to you this morning. They may have even listened to us for years, but they're poo-pooing the idea of using volunteerism as a bridge to the next step.
Yeah, I think you're selling yourself short if you think that way, because volunteering allows your ability to solve problems differently than the next board member or that project or a community advisory board you're involved in. You really don't see what you're capable of doing outside your industry until you're outside that industry. And volunteering is a very organic way or an easy way to add that to your life without working. You know, you're working full time, you have family, you have commitments, but volunteering once, you know, every couple months or every other month, Freddie, that I do think that opens up your mind to where you're at in your crossroads in your career, and maybe see some where you want to go with that. If you don't look at volunteering, I think you're selling yourself short.
Interesting, everybody. We're talking with Joe McKenzie this weekend on New Beginnings about steps you can take when you reach or you think you've reached a crossroad in your career. And we've often talked about your bench of advocates, those individuals who care about us. They've looked at us for years. They know us better than most anybody else. How do you use your bench of advocates, or can you use a bench of advocates at this point when you've reached a crossroad?
I believe you should pull them in. If you need to get out of your head. You can't find every answer on the internet. And allowing a handful of people to help you when you've reached that crossroads, get that clarity, get that direction, get some actionable information. Those bench of advocates, like you said, are the people that know us the best. They've listened to us. They almost see us differently than we see ourselves, right, Freddie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about that. If that's the perception, or they see us in a different role, but we haven't got to that point, what an exciting way to open up new avenues by saying, you know what, I could see you in this role because to me, this is what this is what you deliver on when we interact. So I think those bench of advocates, those people that know us the best, who listen to us, I think can really be a multiplier effect in regards to that clarity piece that we're looking for. And certainly as we get farther along in that crossroad, we've met that crossroads and we're trying to go a new direction. That new direction may come about because of those conversations with those advocates. Do you agree with that statement, Freddie?
I do. And I know one of my advocates even said, well, you might even want to consider doing a part-time job until you can figure out what's going on with your career. Don't quit your main job, but take on something part-time that's closely related or something that's just completely different so you can clear your head. And I thought that individual lost his mind, but that was one of the best suggestions that I could have ever gotten.
I think that's a great example of the impact that an advocate of ours had your best interest at heart, but also knowing that they wanted to see you succeed in that. What a great piece of advice that obviously rippled out from there.
It's really interesting. And so those key things, take time out for reflection. Consider that bridge employment that we just talked about. Volunteer opportunities you mentioned. And key in all of this is contacting that bench of advocates. Joe, we're just about out of time. Do you have a final? We've got 10 seconds. I won't stretch you. So we do some fine work. You do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
Thank you for being with us. And you're listening to New Beginnings. And our program continues right now.
If you are ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. That's rippleconnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. For more information, rippleconnects.com.
Do you ever wish that you could right a wrong or correct a mistake by having the chance to do something over? That gives you a fresh start. That's our point of focus.
I have a great time with my life, and I want to share it.
Nowadays, a lot of people think of positivity and optimism as something unrealistic, something almost delusional.
It teaches the cultivation of peace of mind as a power center out of which comes driving energy.
This is life and enterprise management.
I love living. I think that's infectious. It's something that you can't fake.
The truth is that every day can be a new beginning or a fresh start. Every day you have a new opportunity to mold into something fulfilling. You have the time, a fresh 24 hours, and the capability to do all there is needed to be done. Every relationship is renewed as you contribute more understanding and more gentleness to the situation. Even routine responsibilities begin to hold your interest as you acknowledge that whatever you do your very best. Make a fresh start emotionally, physically, and spiritually, and declare and follow through on that truth that every day is a new beginning or a fresh start. That's our point of focus. If you'd like to learn more, all you have to do is visit me at www.freddiebell.com or call 888-639-9738. Or you can reach me by email. It's freddie@freddiebell.com. freddie@freddiebell.com.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think Real Possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And joining us right now is the White House Senior Advisor and COVID Equity Task Force Director Chair, Dr. Marcela Nunez-Smith. And we're just curious, Doctor, thank you for being with us. We're curious, does the FDA approval mean that the Pfizer vaccine is officially considered safe and effective? Is that enough reason for people to go ahead and take the vaccine?
You know, thank you. It's so great to be with you and in this important conversation. You know, this is very notable that we see the FDA giving full approval to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. You know, there are some people who've been waiting for this moment. This is the stamp of approval they needed to feel really confident and comfortable in the safety and effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccine. And so the answer is yes. For many people, this is a watershed moment. And we're saying if you haven't gotten vaccinated yet, it's not too late. it is urgent, of course, because we're battling Delta across the country.
Everyone, we're talking with Dr. Marcela Nunez-Smith, who works as a White House senior advisor to President Biden. I'm just curious, over 600,000 people who have lost their lives in the last 15 months, you would think that that would be enough reason for people to go ahead and take the vaccine, doctor.
Yeah, you know, it's a tragedy. And, you know, my heart, our heart go out to, of course, the people who are grieving. There's nothing that will bring their loved ones back. You know, at this point, it's even more heartbreaking and heart-wrenching to lose life to COVID-19 because these deaths are now largely preventable because we have vaccines that work. You know, it's important to note that the FDA did approve Pfizer, but we have incredibly strong data, of course, on Moderna and J&J as well. Those vaccines have emergency use authorization. That's a rigorous process as well. So it's really important that people understand that vaccines work at keeping you out of the hospital, keeping people alive, and it's not too late. Go get vaccinated. We don't want your loved ones grieving and unnecessarily at this time.
Doctor, based on the data that you've seen, are there still risks involved with getting the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, or any of the other two?
You know, I have had a chance to take a good look at the data. You know, I'm a practicing internal medicine physician. My advice is unwavering. You know, the risks are so minimal. We have an incredibly strong safety and surveillance system in this country. And what we know for sure is the risk from COVID-19 are not minimal. And we have a choice. It's the virus or the vaccine. And the vaccine, we have seen what it can do, and it's doing its job. It's working to keep people alive and out of the hospital. And sadly, we've seen what the virus can do. And so for those who are 12 and older, you know, please, please, let's do our part together. We can get to the other side of the pandemic and safely.
Why has the Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines not yet been approved by the FDA?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that because, you know, for so many people, all of this is new to understand the process of vaccine development and testing and approval in the country. You know, the FDA plays such a pivotal role, and those scientists and all those advisors are always just eagerly awaiting data from the vaccine manufacturers, and then they can evaluate it and make their determination before advisory group to the CDC makes its recommendations for who should be using the vaccines. And so when it comes to Pfizer, FDA approved the vaccine after reviewing the data from the company. Mm-hmm. Moderna has just submitted its full complete application. So FDA will begin working on that. And so as data come in, FDA stands ready to review.
Would you expect that it would be about another month behind the Pfizer for Moderna to go through and then also another month or so after that for Johnson & Johnson?
You know, I don't want to speculate too much on timeline. You know, I think it's really important for people to have trust in the processes that work there, to know nothing is getting rushed, no steps are getting skipped whatsoever. So the manufacturers, we want them obviously to take their time, be diligent, to submit as soon as they are able to, and then for the FDA to be really at the ready and the CDC. You know, I think that would be wonderful for us if we can see approvals follow for Moderna and J&J, you know, in these coming months. I think that will help people with building their confidence. I know for many employees and others, they are also looking at approval of vaccines to move forward and plans for mandates.
With these types of approvals coming through FDA, do you expect there will be a time when vaccines like this for COVID will be mandatory, doctor?
Well, we're already seeing, you know, various employers mandate the vaccine, you know, as a strategy to keep their communities safe and others, quite frankly. You know, one important, I think, the example to talk about is schools. You know, this is return back to school season.
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep our children safe, particularly our children who are under 12 and not yet eligible for a vaccine? It's by surrounding them with vaccinated adults and doing the other things we know work, like masking. So we do expect to see additional mandates. The president has put into place vaccination mandates for those in the federal government who interface with patients and, of course, a vaccination attestation plan for all other federal employees and contractors. I mean, I think this is really important as we see these mandates. Secretary Austin for the Department of Defense has come out and said, you know, this will get added immediately to the list of mandated vaccines for our troops.
So it seems as if the whole nation is starting to get in line with this. And I just want to go back to the Pfizer vaccine just for a second. With that FDA approval, does it also include language about the booster shot that is really prevalent in the news today?
Yeah, I'm really grateful to have a chance to talk about that. So, you know, the approval came out for the first two shots for those who are age 16 and above. The booster conversation is one that's distinct and different. And also there, I'd want to help clarify, you know, the government came out and said for those who are immunocompromised, your immune system, you know, either because of a diagnosis, because of medications one is taking, just wasn't able to mount a robust response before, you might need three shots in that primary series. So that's something we are encouraging people to talk to their doctors about and go out and get that third shot right away if they're immunocompromised. That's very different than the conversation around boosters, which is to say you might have gone through already and had your two shots. Mm-hmm. And over time, as we see with all vaccines, really, you can get a little bit of a waning in the immunity. And with Delta, that presents another challenge. And so it's going to be important to have that option for people to get that additional boost, especially as we head into the fall winter. And so the plan that we released is for 8 months after the completion of the primary series. But again, that's not starting right now. FDA has to review. The CDC has to weigh in as well. And so we're looking the earliest towards the end of September to start that boost program here in the United States.
Really interesting. There are two parallel numbers, one with the number of people who are fully vaccinated. The other number is those who have received at least one shot. What about those individuals who've only received one? They're immunocompromised. Mm-hmm. Do they go back to the back of the line and they start over with their series, or how would that work?
Yeah, so this is a great point. I mean, you know, it's really important that people complete their vaccination series regardless of whether you're immunocompromised or not. And so that means going and getting that second shot. You do not need to start over again. Again, those people whose immune systems, you know, aren't as strong as everybody else's, those are unique situations. And now what we're really saying is those folks will need three shots to complete the primary series. So getting in conversation with the doctor is really important for you if you're immunocompromised. But again, if you're not, we're also speaking to you. You have to complete that shot. Go get that second one. That really confers a high degree of protection against severe illness, hospitalization, and death.
Doctor, we have only about 35 seconds left or so. Do you still believe the healthcare system in America is at risk, especially when it comes to our BIPOC community?
Yes. You know, I take a deep sigh because, you know, I know my colleagues are out there working tremendously hard around the clock. Here we are again dealing with yet another wave, seeing healthcare systems that are being stretched beyond imagine. And knowing, of course, that there are vaccines out there that can prevent hospitalization, really diminish that risk. So preventable. At this time, we need our healthcare system to be there to be strong for everybody else, too. Remember, not just COVID, but we have to take care of people who have heart attacks and strokes and are having babies and everything else. And so in so many neighborhoods and communities, our healthcare systems were already stressed. And we already know that a result of that has been healthcare inequities over time. And so, of course, there is that concern now as well. We need to be able to support our hospitals. The federal government is doing that to provide care not just to COVID patients, but to everybody, and to do so equitably and with high quality.
Dr. Marcela Nunez-Smith, I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning, coming from the White House, sharing your views on Pfizer and all things vaccines. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Be well.
You too. And New Beginnings continues right now.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, Minnesota Family Investment Program, MFIP, and WIC Nutrition, along with other available programs, can help you buy food while budgets are tight. SNAP, MFIP, and WIC benefits can help families access additional support as well, including health screenings, emergency assistance, nutrition education, and employment training. Apply online at applymn.dhs.mn.gov. This message is powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
We have a very special guest waiting.
Yes, we do. To always keep us alert and on our toes about fraud. There are so many different types of fraud. And who better than Jay Hoppala, Associate State Director of Community Engagement with AARP. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Chantel. Good morning, Freddie. I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day.
It is. Beautiful day.
So now we talk scams all the time. I'm always interested to hear about the latest ones to be on the lookout for. And you have something called the Fraud Watch Network with AARP. But Black Americans encounter some different kinds of scams that most often when compared to other groups. This I did not know, as usual. You're always putting me up on new information about scams. Talk about some of the different scams that Black Americans specifically are targeted for.
Yeah, that's right. We had this idea that different cultural groups here in the United States are going to have different ways that they encounter scams, different type of scams that they are more likely to encounter and also respond to. And we did this research by surveying 2,800 adults across the country about their experience with fraud. So what I'm going to do now for you is go down a list of what are some of the top scams that Black Americans are targeted with. And the biggest difference we found is that more Black people, Black folks, are responding to the grandparent scam. And this grandparent scam, what that is that these imposters pretend to be someone's grandchild who's in trouble, like they've been mixed up in some sort of crime and they've been arrested. They call on their scam victim. They say, you know, grandma, grandpa, I need some money because I'm here in jail and I need you to send it right away. Otherwise, I'm going to be in even deeper trouble. And also, don't tell anyone else about it. We got to keep it a secret. But I need you to send this money. The next one on our list that is the top way that Black Americans are targeted is with government imposter scams. So this could be someone impersonating the IRS about some fake situation with your taxes. It could be the Social Security Administration saying that your Social Security and identity has been compromised and you have to respond. It could be any number of ways that the con artist is trying to get their victim to give up personal information or send money or give access to their online accounts. But it starts with that story about a government agency that needs their scam victim to respond, but it's just really some imposters. Going down the list, people are targeted by lottery scams. So pretty simple. They say that you've won a prize and you need to send some money to pay for the taxes or fees before you get your millions of dollars. There's been a big rise, especially during the pandemic, in work from home scams where they say if you want to work from home, people lost their jobs out there and they're looking for a new job. Wouldn't it be nice to have one where you can just work from home? But these jobs are actually involved in this whole industry of fraud. So when people sign up and they get their job working from home, in a lot of cases, they're actually processing payments from other scam victims and sending them along to different bank accounts, which makes it really hard for the investigators to track the payments and get these victims their money back. But also people who start doing these jobs, they could get in trouble because they're using their own bank account to process these payments from other scam victims. And then finally, for Black Americans, where we found a special kind of focus with scams, is investment scams, where, you know, people are trying to invest in the stock market or things like that. But what happens is that someone in their real life family group or their church group or their community group, someone gets victimized and they're being told the story about how they're going to make money off of this investment. And then they start telling their friends at church about it. And now there's a whole bunch of people who are getting scammed of this investment thing.
Wow.
So yeah, those are the top sort of headlines from this research report that we have.
And you would never know that you're a victim. of some of these scams. We're talking to Jay Hoppala of AARP, Associate State Director, Community Engagement. You have something called the AARP Fraud in America, the Black Experience. This is something you have a report online. Is all of this information in this report online and more details on how you can be aware of these some of these scams directly targeting Black people?
Yeah, that's true. That research report is free and it's available to everyone online. I think the best way for folks to find it is just do a web search, go to your internet browser and type in AARP Fraud in America Black Experience, and you're going to be able to find it. There is a lot more detail there. And then, you know, this report is one thing, but our main thing with the Fraud Watch Network is people can call us. They can, if they're trying to figure out is something a scam, if they've been victimized and lost money and need some help, they can call us. And I can give folks the phone number. Hope you got your pens ready out there. It's 877-908-3360. Or, you know, you can go online and find that phone number, too. Just do a search for AARP Fraud Watch Network.
Absolutely. What about the do not call list, Jay? I'm curious about this. It seems like I had to go down the list of all of these numbers calling my phone and just it's all of these. I don't even know. It seems like fraudulent calls, but I block them and they still get through. This do not call list, does it actually work? Like, how do you put yourself on a do not call list?
Yeah, that's in my notes here about the do not call list. And what our research found is over half of African Americans are not registered for the do not call list. And I talk to a lot of people who say, why would I want to register for this do not call list? Because the scammers still call me anyway. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal, is that if you're on the do not call list and someone's still calling you with some, you know, sales call or something like that, they're breaking the rules. So you shouldn't be trusting them. And that's what the do not call list can do for you is once you're on it, then you know anyone who's calling you to sell you something is either a scammer or some kind of business that doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you...
Yeah, and I don't have the phone number.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have the phone number in front of me, but I think, too, folks could just do a web search for do not call list. You can look up the phone number, and you can also register online. And if you got a cell phone and a landline, you got two cell phones, you have to do it for each phone number you have.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jay Hoppala, we always appreciate you keeping us up to date on frauds and scams and everything that's happening with AARP, keeping up with this particular section of things that we have to deal with in the world today. Any final thoughts or information for people to get in touch with you or AARP?
Yeah, so this report that we published, it actually found that Black adults under the age of 30 are most likely to report being targeted by a scam. Mm-hmm. So what this tells me is it's a great opportunity for families and for our community to have these intergenerational conversations. If you're an older person and you got this wisdom and experience with scams, you know, share that with the young people in your life. And if you're a young person and you're worried about your elders being victimized, start that conversation, whether it's your grandma or your mom or your neighbor. Start that conversation and help protect each other from all these financial threats.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jay. We appreciate you. More information is at aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. We appreciate your time.
Yes, ma'am.
You're listening to New Beginnings, and our program continues right now.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think real possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/twincities.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited that you're with us this weekend on New Beginnings. And as we continue, a team of behavioral researchers at Morningstar, using a survey from a University of Chicago survey, quantified how four biases lead people to have less in savings, more debt, and lower credit scores. Interesting. Based on survey responses, 1,200 participants were sorted into three buckets: one, financially vulnerable; two, financially coping; or 3, healthy. Any of these sound familiar? Loss aversion bias, when an investment falls below what we paid for it, our inclination is, rather than carefully reassess whether it remains a viable investment or not, to tell ourselves, I'll sell it when it gets back to my purchase price. What makes you believe it's going to bounce back? People afflicted with loss aversion bias were 1.5 times more likely to be in the vulnerable group than those with lower loss aversion. Overconfidence bias, we're often convinced when we are smarter than we are. Though decades of data has shown that most professional money managers won't beat the market, billions of dollars remain invested in actively managed mutual funds. It's overconfidence for most of us to believe that we have better information than others. Researchers found that people with a high level of overconfidence were 2.5 times more likely to land in the vulnerable group and 3.5 times less likely to save for retirement. We're talking about how personal biases can affect your investing, and then present bias. Delayed gratification isn't easy. Think about that. A dollar spent today on something that brings us pleasure is so much more enticing than stuffing that dollar into a retirement account that we won't use for decades. People who struggle the most with present bias were almost 2 times more likely to be in the vulnerable group. Low present bias people, though, are 7.5 times more likely to plan ahead for their future. Base rate neglect bias. These are people who can get swept away by a new piece of information that compels us to make a decision that we otherwise wouldn't if we carefully considered the probability of that piece of information being correct or useful. Participants in the bucket of a high level of base rate neglect were 1.75 times more likely to be financially vulnerable. To overcome present bias, automate your savings. To avoid getting caught up in new information, limit your risky behavior. And then finally, carve out just 5% of your investments for day trading, according to the experts, and wild ideas. 2 other steps could include slow down and talk to a financial planner with an eye on the long term. And what about those bad labels? How can they affect trust in investors? All natural, eco-friendly, and green, we've seen it before. Food, home goods, and clothing companies have all jumped on the sustainable bandwagon, and it's not just because of their undying devotion to the environment. According to the 2019 Accenture Chemicals Global Consumer Sustainability Survey, more than half of consumers surveyed would pay more for sustainable, meaning recyclable or reusable, products. But not every company is genuine in its pursuits of a cleaner planet or more equitable society. And making false or misleading claims about greenness can affect investor trust. Greenwashing is a misrepresentation of a product, service, or investment, making something appear to be more sustainable than it actually is. Environmental, social, and governance criteria are at the heart of ESG investing, which has grown significantly in popularity over the last several years. ESG criteria are factors that measure an investment's sustainability. Unfortunately, with the rise of consumer and investor interest in ESG comes the rise in greenwashing. This can lead some businesses, such as oil companies, to be included in funds that investors may not have expected. Critics have also called ESG and other forms of sustainable investing marketing ploys or scams, noting that sustainability is just a trend that companies are trying to capitalize on. One reason why greenwashing has been able to slip through the cracks when it comes to investment securities is that there are numerous ESG data providers. And because sustainable companies offer ESG evaluations, it can be difficult to know which ones to trust. Greenwashed investments, or investments not being what they claim, was the biggest concern for 44% of investors when it comes to ESG investing, that according to recent research from Quilter, a UK-based wealth management service. The field of sustainable investing is still relatively new, and while industry-wide standardization may still be a long time coming, there are ways to increase the green in your portfolio and hopefully your wallet. ESG funds usually publish impact reports, allowing investors to see real-world changes their investment dollars are making. Robo-advisors offer automated ESG investment portfolios. And so if you'd like professional help, you can also work with a financial advisor, of course, who has a chartered SRI counselor certification, which is a designation program designed to teach the best practices for socially responsible investing. You're listening to New Beginnings, and our program continues right now.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your doctor or clinic today about the vaccines your child needs and the safety measures they have in place to protect your family during COVID-19. Go to health.mn.us/immunize for more. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Today's lesson is looking at what is unity today? Now, that may seem like a simple question. We may all have a lot of different opinions about that. But it's important from time to time, whether it's a relationship with someone you can't help falling in love with, whether it's an organization such as our church and a community, many different things. And of course, probably most in our mind this last year, has been our nation, our democracy. You know, if I just ask you, what is democracy? Oh, you'll just answer right away, maybe not with a scholarly answer, but you'll say what it means to you. You're just absolutely sure of it. But my friends, we have seen in recent times, it's important for Americans to stop, as well as other nations around the world, and say, what does this really mean to us? And what are we willing to work to maintain? Is it precious enough? Is it important enough to us that we're willing to work for it? And in a smaller, more micro scale, I'd like us to think about what is unity today, both as a movement of hundreds of churches around the country and throughout the world, and as our own church. Does the unity idea mean enough to you that you're willing to work for it, that you're willing to constantly, perhaps annually, recreate it for yourself. Rediscover it. Now, the mood that Adam created here reminded me. We're going to look back a little bit, because if you don't look back at your roots, how do you know what you stand for? And that's true in unity as well. And I was thinking back in the mid-1920s in Kansas City, occasionally Myrtle Fillmore would come on Unity's radio station WOQ. Often it was Charles, because Charles liked to talk. Myrtle was more interested in prayer and working with people one-on-one, but she would go on the air at certain times, but she'd keep it very personal. And she'd say, dear friend. And she was speaking, as experts think, to an audience of about 100,000 in the Kansas City area that were listening to WOQ. And she'd say, dear friend, I'd like to come in right now and give you a hug, if it could. I think she might have sung this melody, I can't help loving you, if it had been written in her day. Because she wanted that connection with people. Now, she had a very fundamental reason, because it was her conviction through her own healing experience that birthed the unity movement 132 years ago, that that presence of life that she cherished within herself, and she knew it had healed her of the tuberculosis that had plagued her, and the doctors giving her but 6 months to live. Find someone to take care of your family, especially your children, because you're not going to be here much longer. She had been up to the very edge in her life. And she discovered this power within, and she praised the life that brought her into this world. And she knew it was life's desire to heal her. She had her healing, and then she realized, how can I but not share this with others? Not in the sense of telling them what to do, but sharing her story, her experience. And she wouldn't pray for them. She would say, as Yvette does, how may I pray with you? The slogan of Silent Unity, I want to join you and be with you as we affirm the truth of God in your life. The power that is your help for every situation. So Myrtle, I believe, carried that song in her heart. I can't help loving you, because she knew the truth. How could she love that God within her that brought forth her healing and not see it active in others? Well, I made notes. I guess I ought to look at them. What is unity today? What does it mean to you? I want you to think about it, not just during this lesson, but also think about it throughout this coming week, at least. It deserves at least that much time to reflect on it. Now, for some people, from my experience, unity means oneness or connection with everyone. For some people, unity means a positive outlook on life, trying to see the good, the best, and bring it into expression. For some people, unity means a teaching in which all religious paths are honored, for they all lead to God. For others, unity is a spiritual community where you are welcomed, respected, and empowered to be your true and highest self. Again, I ask, what does unity mean to you? So before we can consider what is unity today, we might look back 132 years ago and see how it got started. Just the gist of it, not great detail, so everybody relax. But the Fillmores wrote in that first issue of Unity Magazine in 1891, the following. And they didn't put a byline on it. I suspect that it's Charles, but Myrtle could be pretty intense in her speaking for truth as well. But sometimes they came across with almost a fanatical style, because what they were presenting was quite a new thought in their day. And so they wrote this in the opening of Unity Magazine. A very little common sense will show you that you are sustained body and soul by that invisible cause which ever wells up in you and will always manifest as the silent builder when you heed its monition. Be still and know that I am God.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
If you're ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. Visit RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. Go to RippleConnects.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.